All right, Ralph, I'm so glad you're here. We desperately missed you last week, not just for the showbiz report, but because, we had a bunch of interesting shows last week, a lot of great guests. But we had one guy on in particular that when we hung up on the phone with him on Friday, we thought, oh, I wish Ralph were here because Ralph would hate this guy so much and it would be so entertaining to watch you flip out on him.
What was the situation?
The situation
wasn't the situation,
oh,
first of
Gilligan.
All.
The situation was, and every once in a while on this program, we all have interests maybe that the whole room doesn't share, but we get a break here and there to talk about something that we're into. You know, right. Ralph, you might be talking about some old movie that you love. Kevin might be talking about soccer.
Right.
But for me, it was Record Store Day. Record Store Day was this weekend, and that's a huge deal for people like me who go to record stores, and I know there aren't many of us left. So I pitched
you
the
guy. Is that the one day here they actually open a record store so people can shop there? Is that why it's called Record Store Day?
Somebody tweeted over the weekend, hey, it's Record Store Day. Go down to where yours used to be and buy a Jamba Juice. So anyway, Record Store Day is this weekend, and it's a celebration of independent record stores, and there's tons of new releases that come out specific for those days in limited editions. Like the Foo Fighters put out a new album on Saturday that's only available on vinyl. It's only available through independent record stores, and it's a collection of all of their cover songs, plus a couple of new cover songs they've never released before. That's the type of item that draws you into the record store, and the point is to point out these stores are still alive and you should still shop there.
Yeah, I wait for eBay Day, and then I get those things.
Right.
It's a different holiday I celebrate.
So producer Alex lined up one of the co-founders of Record Store Day to come on with us for a few minutes on Friday to promote the event that was happening on Saturday, which I think, I appreciate what they're doing. I would hope that they would appreciate that we're giving them this platform, this opportunity, probably the biggest show that they're going to be on this year to promote their event, right?
Right. Dude, they're hipsters.
Right, they're hipsters.
What don't you get about that?
Kevin, you want to pick it up from here?
Yeah, absolutely.
Bean starts off by asking the guy to explain it to people if they're not clear on what Record Store Day is,
right.
Which this guy cannot fathom. He doesn't understand the concept that not everyone...
Someone might not know the international holiday of Record Store Day.
Most people right. listening have probably no idea that Record Store Day even exists. Why don't you tell us about it?
Yeah, wow. There's a lot to cover for people that haven't heard of it. Open up a blog.
Asses. Yeah.
Open up a blog.
Open up a blog.
Don't you open up a Starbucks so you can make a living, record store asshole.
So already, if you don't know what his little world is all about, then it's your fault. You're
wow.
to blame.
Wow, a lot to cover. Not really. It's Record Store Day. It's the day we celebrate the few remaining record stores that are left in America.
That's it. That's all it is.
Yeah. Come on down and buy something, please.
But he really...
So I can get another piercing.
He was offended. He was offended that B would suggest that anyone might not know
wow.
about Record Store Day.
Wow. They don't know? Jeez.
Open up a blog.
Yeah.
So that happened, and then he's talking about the few remaining stores that are still out there, including his own.
You know, there were so many stores that were awesome, if I may. My own store in Atlanta, Georgia, Criminal Records, I would hopefully want it to be on that list.
Yeah.
You're awesome.
If I may say, mine was one of the best.
People travel from around the world to go to Atlanta to buy their records. It is awesome.
He's so awesome that he closed down.
This isn't open anymore?
No, his is gone.
This guy is the problem with indie hipsters. It's this attitude of, I'm so much superior to everyone else.
And the less popular and the more obscure something is, the cooler automatically it is. And if you have closed your record store, you no longer get to be the spokesperson for Record Store Day, by the way. I don't know. Go celebrate whatever it is you're doing now, hipster.
So why are they doing Record Store Day?
The core good indie record stores, and there's a bunch of us, everything's cool. And the point of our party was, you're missing a party.
Yeah, the party is no longer.
The message is everything's cool. The point of the party was you're missing the party.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So now Bean brings up that Metallica played the first Record Store Day, I believe, in San Francisco.
Rasputin's right.
Okay. And this guy, it's okay that Bean brought it up, but he's a little annoyed that Bean was not up on what he did at his store on that day.
Oh.
Because Metallica was like, that was ground zero, I guess, for Record Store Day.
Sure.
That was also a simultaneous Record Store Day at all these other stores. You know, at that moment, I had Janelle Monae doing her third in-store at my own store. You know, the first year, we had about 8 months lead. It was just a bunch of record store goofballs sitting around a table, and we said, hey, let's have Record Store Day. 8 months later, we did. And, you know, it was, well, I wasn't able to be there to say hi to Metallica at Rasputin's, but I threw a good party here.
I had a good party here.
Oh.
Janelle Monae.
Janelle Monae. How did you land her?
Was doing her third in-store, my store.
Good thing you had 8 months to land Janelle Monae. Because I'm sure her schedule was just booked with coffee houses and other poetry jams that you had to be at. F you.
I tried.
So I wasn't able to go with Metallica.
Whatever.
Ass. But I had Janelle Monae for my third in-store. Wow, what an a-hole this guy is. Bean, where was he? Was he Atlanta?
Yes.
Is that where he was talking to us from?
I guess. I don't know what dry cleaner he's working for now, but yeah, he was in Atlanta. Yeah. He was not the best spokesperson for the holiday. Do you find that Record Store Day, with the publicity that it gets, does it bring maybe people kind of back to the fold of getting in the habit again of walking the aisles and just browsing and shopping the way they used to?
Now, here's what I like about this particular thing is that Bean never, ever, ever helps people along and tries to get them to sell the event.
Bean gave him his answer already. All the guy has to say is yes.
In every question.
The only thing he had to do.
Bean really is passionate about Record Store Day. So Bean wanted it to go well. So he was just lobbing softballs, and this guy would not have it. He just wouldn't have it. It was just crazy.
You know, there is what the industry calls a halo effect.
There is what the industry calls a halo effect.
The week before and the weeks after are actually really good for indie retail. A lot of people can't make it out on Saturday, so they fill their shopping cart during the week. But really, it's a reminder, and forgive me if I get a little hoity-toity here.
All right, listen.
Oh, now you know you're in trouble.
You use the words hoity-toity. That's bad, right?
Yeah.
No one should use the word.
And nothing following that phrase can be
ever
good.
Is any good.
No.
It's a reminder for us to shop local. That's the whole point.
All right, now, this is where he goes on a little rant about how
we're not going to think globally here, are we, in shop local?
I'm afraid so.
Yes, we are, because of the tax benefits of these stores that aren't making any money anymore.
You know, Amazon is cool every now and again, so is iTunes, but those companies don't put taxes into your cities. You know, they don't, iTunes isn't going to sponsor your Little League team. So that's the important message, you know, like you don't have to buy everything locally, but buy some things locally because your city needs the tax revenue.
Yeah.
Yeah. So buy locally.
Because my city needs the tax revenue.
Yeah.
So I can't go on iTunes or Amazon anymore because the city needs a...
Here's the thing. You work for a dying industry. You need to recognize you need to move on.
Find a new store that brings tax revenues into the city that provides a product and service that people actually want and actually want to go to.
Look, you can drive your car all you want, but every once in a while you should get out a horse and you should ride your horse because there are a lot of people making horseshoes these days that need the work.
This guy's not driving a milk wagon or he's opening a butcher shop someplace.
Thank you so much for joining us. We'll do it again next year, Eric.
Please. Thank you.
Oh, bye-bye, sir.
By the way, we're not doing it next
Never
year.
Never doing it again.
You lied to your guest at the end of that interview.
We might. I mean, we might do it, but not with him. Not with him. This is a douchebag of the highest order, and he's part of the problem, not part of the solution.
Well, it'll be easier next year because we'll find the one guy who still has a record store, and we'll talk to him on Record Store Day.
Open up a blog.
Yeah.
Weenie Roast Fast approaching, by the way, 2 weeks from tomorrow, completely sold out thanks to you. And thanks to those of you who didn't buy tickets, we're still giving them away. And you have a chance to win them coming up. We'll tell you how on the way from the Kevin and Bean Show.
There's a new test that scientists have learned how to test your blood. You give them a sample of blood, and they'll tell you how long you live.
What? Really?
How about that? It's not,
I'm in.
Not 100%, obviously, but they think they've isolated something called a telomere, I believe is how you say it. I think that's how it says. Part of the DNA. And if you have a short telomere, then you're going to live a shorter life, and if you have a long one, you're going to live a longer life. So you can literally go in and give them blood, and they'll say, tomorrow, sorry.
Oh, my God.
No, I don't think it's that accurate, but, I mean, they can tell you if you're going to live a long life.
Like if you have the gene for it, essentially.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
It is interesting because, you know, oftentimes your body does not feel that it is the same age as it actually is. So you can be 40, for instance, but have the body of a 20-year-old or have the body of a 60-year-old.
Yeah.
It all depends on how you were built. And that's why it's interesting. And, you know, it has reignited the debate that we've had on this show many times before, which is, would you want to know how long you have left and to what degree of accuracy? I mean, it's one thing to know you have 25 years left. It's another thing to know you have 9 months.
Yeah, sure. But I don't think it's that quite that accurate.
What do you do with that information?
Yeah, let's check. We had Alex get the scientists on the phone, so that's good news,
okay.
Right? We have Dr. I don't have his name here. Dr. Charles McNider. Hello, doctor.
Good morning, Kevin and Bean. How are you?
we're fine, doctor. Are you working on this blood test that we've been talking about?
Yes, I'm one of the people who was there when we invented it, don't you know?
Great news.
Very exciting. I was working in the lab late one night.
Where are you now? So it is no longer science fiction. This is a science fact now.
Yeah.
To what degree of can you tell us how many years we have left? I mean, how accurate is this test?
All right, listen up.
Okay.
It's not that detailed.
Okay, all right.
Like, we can't tell you exactly when you're going to die.
Well, get on it.
But we do know that these telomeres, which are structures at the tips of the different chromosomes,
right?
When they're shorter, people tend to have shorter lifespans.
Okay.
So we can't detail whether you have some horrible disease or whatever, but we can look at your blood and look at the chromosomes and give you a general idea about how long you're going to live. The longer the telomere, the longer the lifespan, the shorter the telomere, well, you understand the rest.
Sure.
Okay, yeah. Certainly is. Now, we sent off some blood when we were preparing for this interview.
Yes, I have it right here in my laboratory.
You do? Okay, so that did get to you. Now, what are you able to tell us from those results, doctor?
Let's take a look. First, right. L. May is the subject, L. May.
Lisa May.
Yeah,
Lisa,
me.
She's here, right?
Run that through the...
Oh, I can do it live. That's awesome.
Well, I got the results here. El May has the body of a 27-year-old.
Yeah.
Nice.
With 9 different STDs.
Oh, so good news, bad news.
That won't shorten my lifespan, will it?
Well, it depends on which ones you don't get treated. But I suggest you make some phone calls to some fellas that you've been with.
Wow.
Because
you're like a walking Petri dish.
Okay.
I don't want to say whore, but come on.
We've said it before. Don't worry, doctor.
Kay Ryder.
That's
Kay
me.
Ryder.
Kevin, yes.
Kevin, he's here. All right.
All right.
This blood is... can be used as lamp oil, it says.
What does that mean?
There's enough alcohol in it that it'll burn for days.
Oh! But I hadn't taken a drink when I took it, when we sent it to you.
Well, you've been taking a drink for about 47 years, according to what my calculations are.
Now, does that mean...
We had a small alcohol firing in the lab when we exposed it to air. Got near a Bunsen burner, and the next thing you know, the whole place went up.
That's terrible. Does that at least make him well-preserved, though, and nothing will kill him?
No, it actually means his brain dead... and his liver will soon be falling out of his body.
Oh, that's not good.
That's very sad.
Wow, you're a bummer.
B. Baxter. Bean.
Oh,
Baxter.
That's me. Right? All right. Nervous now.
This blood was taken from a mummy, it says.
From a mummy?
Yes, this subject was born sometime in the Paleolithic era.
Well, we've always...
or as a prospector from the 1800s.
But it's from a live person, doctor.
Oh, sure it is. Okay. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Have a little fun with the doctor, aren't you? You sent me some ancient blood.
No, this is from a living person.
I know. When anyone was exposed to the blood here in the lab, they got less fun. I know that.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Took the fun right out of them?
Sucked the fun right out of the room.
Okay. Thanks for doing that.
And it is time for an all-new Bean's Death Corner.
Not yet. Now it is.
Mug says not yet.
All right, here we go.
Hey, everybody. Gather all the kiddies around the radio. It's time for Bean's Death Corner.
Bean loves death any time of day. He gets all giddy and screams hooray.
There's something wrong in his head. Death.
We don't know what's wrong with Bean, but now you'll get to see what we mean.
Oh, Bean loves death. Oh, Bean loves death.
I love death.
It's not that I love death.
Yes,
it's that
it is.
I pre-ordered the new Final Destination 5 movie, and I can't wait for it to come out on DVD so I can watch it every single
day. Here's what you need to know about Bean. He's got a Google alert for the obituaries in the New York Times.
Well, of course I do. Who doesn't?
All people.
Here's a bizarre and tragic story out of my state of Washington, Edgewood, a Seattle suburb in the news. And by the way, you can see more on all of these stories, see photos and video in some cases at kevinandbean.com. We do put each of the death corners on the line for you, too. Edgewood, Washington is where it happens. A 17-year-old goes to visit his uncle just last Friday night, Kevin, and he sees that his uncle is involved in an altercation in the front yard. There's a guy trying to hit this boy's uncle in the head with a pipe. So the 17-year-old says, no, not here you don't. So he runs over there, pulls out a knife, and stabs the dude to death who's in an altercation with his uncle. That man, ladies and gentlemen, who he killed, turned out to be his own father.
What?
That, it,
was very dark out. The police said it was difficult to see. They had been estranged from one another. The boy did not recognize his own father as the one who was in a fight with his brother and ended up killing him. How about that? Is that crazy?
Wow.
How's that for
so
bad surprise up. After the fact, right? Oh. Now we take you into the air. This is a tragic story about a beautiful young couple that had been living in Singapore. He was from New Zealand. He had met his girlfriend in Singapore. They'd been dating for about 3 years, and he was taking her back to New Zealand to meet his family. In fact, to help celebrate his mom's 50th birthday. Well, on the plane, in the air, about 90 minutes into the flight, they're flying on Jetstar when they come around with the in-flight meal, and the man gets the beef. You should never get the beef. You always get the chicken. That's the moral of this story.
That is the tip.
He starts choking, and he dies on the flight with his girlfriend sitting next to him. I thought he was laughing very hard. Then I looked at his face, and his eyes were rolling, and he couldn't talk. His lips were turning purple, she later said.
Oh.
A doctor and two nurses on board quickly rushed to help after hearing her scream for help. They performed CPR on him but were unable to save him. The doctor came to me and said he was so sorry, he did his best. Now, they're 2 hours into an 11-hour flight at this point over the ocean. By the way, it's not like there's an easy way to turn around and go back or something like that.
She doesn't have to sit next to him.
They took the body and covered it in a sheet and put it in the galley, but she said she didn't want him back there by himself under a sheet, and she requested that they bring him back and put him in the seat next to her where she sat next to his corpse for 9 hours as they made it to New Zealand.
That's sweet of her, but everyone else around had to be going, hey, galley for me. I'm good with that. I don't need him dead guy there.
Yeah, that's no good. And by the way, I was thinking about this. If you had talked them into turning around and going back to Singapore, you still then would have had to take the body probably and fly it home to New Zealand where he was from to be with his family and be buried there, right? So you might as well take advantage of the free air travel to get the body home at this point.
I am shocked you can't save a choking victim.
That's a great point.
I'm shocked there's a doctor and two nurses on a flight. And they could do nothing.
Yeah, it seemed like they had a lot of things going in their favor, but it didn't work out. He was only 31 years old, too, by the way, which is very sad. Mm. Here's a story out of Parsons, Tennessee this time. I don't know what the details were that drove this guy so crazy about the seating arrangements as the father of the bride was helping to plan his little daughter's upcoming wedding. But apparently he got into a fight with the pastor of the church.
What?
He lunged toward the pastor. The pastor pushed the man and he fell and hit his head on the pavement and later died at the Vanderbilt Medical Center. Now, here's the ethical question involved here, Lisa. You're the bride. Your dad just died bitching about the seating arrangements. Do you go on with the wedding? And if you do, do you use the same pastor? Or is it at this point, it's just too uncomfortable to be in the same room with the guy?
I think you'd find a new pastor.
probably
a new church.
You'd have to find a new pastor. I mean, definitely. But if the dad is arguing over the seating arrangements at your wedding.
But why is the pastor arguing over the seating arrangements?
Why are you that upset about it?
I just, I don't know. It does put a black mark on what otherwise could have been a beautiful day, though, because poor old dad is not there to walk you down the aisle. Here's a tragic story that almost didn't make it into Bean's Death Corner. A 21-year-old motorcyclist in Brooklyn was involved in an accident. I guess a 70-year-old woman, Kevin, you'll appreciate this, was driving a Taurus. She ran a red light and ran into the motorcycle guy and pinned him on the ground.
What a surprise.
But as old people do. But fortunately, emergency personnel were nearby, and they were able to come and lift the car off of the motorcyclist. Unfortunately, before they were able to pull the man out from under the car, somebody goofed, they slipped, the car fell back down and crushed him to death.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
A witness said the car was about 4 feet up, then it just dropped right back down right on top of him. Everybody in the crowd screamed. So missed it by that much. And finally, we take you to Pittsburgh, where the Steelers are the big thing. The Steelers' preseason has already begun. Of course, they're playing against Atlanta this past Saturday night. Charles McGauley was at the game when he got word that his father had had a heart attack and died. So the man and his wife quickly left the Steelers preseason game. And by the way, that's a shock to me. Steelers fans are pretty diehard. I'm surprised that he would leave the game because at this point, his dad's already dead. What could he do,
and he's
right?
83.
Yeah, he was 83, right. So 54-year-old Charles leaves the game with his wife to go to dad's home to comfort mom. Well, he has a heart attack on his way to see his dead father.
What?
He also drops dead on the way to see dad. Father and son died an hour and 7 minutes apart.
And then everyone else at Three Rivers Stadium, or whatever it's called, died of heart attacks.
No, that didn't happen. Oh. But what are the chances that both of them died in the same night? What a bummer for that family,
oh,
too.
My
yeah, way to cheer
God.
Up mom, dude.
The only thing that would make it okay is if the Steelers end up winning that game. I didn't see the result of the game against Atlanta. But this has been an all-new Beans Death Corner.
That was Beans Death Corner.
Oh, Bean loves death. Oh, Bean loves death.
Oh, Bean loves death so much.
Well, I'm glad that Ralph Garman has joined us in studio because we need to settle this. It's like the London riots are out of control, Ralph, and you need to come in and be the hammer here. You need to stop this, wow. these people out and tell them what's what.
You know, it's funny.
Hammer, don't hurt them.
It's funny. most of the time we can judge what kind of response we're going to get. But in this particular case, Ralph brought up a cartoon, Hong Kong Phooey, and the floodgates opened.
These are the things people are passionate about, which I love, by the way.
It's Hong Kong Phooey, number one super guy.
So Ralph brought this up, and they were going to remake it as a movie. And then the email started.
Yeah. I think because I disparaged it as not being a particularly good Saturday morning cartoon. It was fine, but it was sort of marginal. And I couldn't understand why anyone would want to make a big budget remake of Hong Kong Phooey, which isn't even like top of mind. If I were to say Hong Kong Phooey to the average person, they probably wouldn't even know the show.
Yeah.
Right. True. I agree. Yeah. Although it did develop, apparently, as you mentioned, Ralph, it did go into syndication and has been running, you know, was running in the 80s for a while. Now is back on another one of the channels now. So, I mean, it does continue to pick up new fans. But it's not what comes to mind when you start thinking about the classic
no.
Saturday morning cartoons. Like, what are the – and we have a huge post up at KevinandBean.com with a list where you can vote for your favorites. And it's just they're all over the board. I mean, there are people who are passionate about Ren and Stimpy. No doubt that's the best. Thundercats is the best. And then there are other people throwing out things I've never heard of, like Rocco's Modern Life is somebody's pick for the best cartoon ever.
Yeah. Here's the thing. We live in a world now with cable that there's a ton of kids programming on television and a ton of animation on programs, a very lucrative part of the entertainment industry. So there's great animation out there, like Rocco's, I think, is really good. Ren and Stimpy, I think, are really good. But they never struck me as really like Saturday morning cartoons. They could be on almost any time. And it would be like Beavis and Butthead or something. You know, that's a great cartoon, but it's not really a Saturday morning cartoon. I always sort of compartmentalize it into great animation and then great shows that particularly were identified with Saturday mornings.
Hey, hey, hey!
For example.
It's Fat Albert!
How about Fat Albert?
Fat Albert, a classic that does not hold up today when you watch it, by the way.
Is it extremely racist, by the way?
No, it's not.
It's not?
It's the opposite. I mean, Bill Cosby was the creative mind behind that and was the executive producer, and it's a very inclusive. There's a lot. You see a lot of races and stuff like that. Sometimes, weirdly, you see a lot of races, like a white girl's just living in the ghetto with all the other black guys, and no one ever mentions it. But they all have a problem at school. And
you got no class. You like school on Sunday.
Tell me what that is.
Come on, He-Man, Masters of the Universe. What is wrong with
God.
You?
I couldn't recognize
that. That's Prince Adam
it.
Holding up the sword. I have the power of Grayskull.
We are looking
for an awesome cartoon.
We're looking
that
for
also
the...
does not hold up when you're watching it.
Well, okay, wait a minute. Now, there's two different things. Are you looking for holds
no,
up?
No, not at all.
Okay,
no, I'm just as a passing sort
so
of
so the category is
moment.
Best Saturday morning cartoon ever.
Right. I have my own opinions, but you just played two really strong contenders in a row. Right there.
He said he could, no one should terrify the neighborhood, but he could just won't be undone. Playing pranks on everyone.
He's playing pranks on everyone.
Heathcliff, you know how I feel about Heathcliff.
But he's playing pranks.
You know
on
how
everyone.
I feel about Heathcliff.
You don't understand.
Marmaduke, Garfield, and its ilk.
Doesn't even count.
It was a movie. I hate all those cartoons that were based on other things. I'm looking for real deal, original, from whole cloth, Saturday morning cartoons.
La, 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 la. Sing a happy song.
Freaking
la,
Smurf.
La, 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 la. Smurf,
yeah, Smurf you mother Smurfers.
Now,
I'm so pissed off you made $135 million for that piece of Smurf you put out.
You mentioned cable channels. A lot of them are running cartoons, even on Saturday mornings. On the networks now, because I'm up on Saturday mornings, I turn on the TV. It seems like ABC is the only one that's still going with cartoons. Everybody else is doing sports and infomercials and stuff like that. So you'll turn on, and like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are on ABC right now. There's a bunch of other shows. I mean, there is still a Saturday morning audience, but it's probably nothing like it was back in the 80s and 90s where everybody watched the same shows.
Because networks are finding out that they're losing, the audience is so spread out. It's so watered down now that you really can't pull numbers to make it worth your while on a Saturday morning. Used to be, there were three networks. They all were fighting for a small group of kids that were up on Saturday mornings eating their cereal they wanted to capture. But now there's 24-hour, you know, cartoon networks.
Thunder! Thunder! Thunder!
Oh, Thundercats were good.
All right.
Yeah, two things. Thundar the Barbarian. There was a lot of thunder going on in the 80s for some reason.
Two things you can do for us. Go to KevinAndBean.com and cast your vote on your favorite, and you can pick up to 10 in an enormous list of shows there at KevinAndBean.com to vote for who your favorite of the all-time Saturday morning cartoons is. And you can call us and get on the air, too, at 1-800-520-1067. Lines are already full.
Thunder
got a lot of great choices.
We'll
talk to you next, coming up on the Kevin and Bean Show.
The Transformers, more than meets the eye. Autobots wage their battle to destroy the evil forces of the Decepticons.
This one was, I would say, successfully changed into a movie series.
It was. It was one of the few that has actually made the leap. Most Saturday morning cartoons that get made into movies, whether it's Josie and the Pussycats or... Let's think of some of the others. Anyway, it's not a good process, usually. Usually they fail. Sometimes if they do it in just animation, I believe Hong Kong Fu is going to be just animated. They may be able to come up with something. But I guess Smurfs did pretty well for itself, though, didn't it?
Yeah. We're talking about the best Saturday morning cartoons of all time, so don't bother calling if you want to say, you know, Simpsons or Robot Chicken. That's not what we're talking about
right here.
It's crazy how many there are. I mean, we've got a list on KevinAndBean.com that you can vote on. That must be 80 names long. But people are writing in with things like Gumby and the Laugh Olympics.
Laugh Olympics. All of Hanna-Barbera's greatest characters competing in comedy Olympics. Yogi Bear's like doing the broad jump and stuff. And it was awesome.
Bananas in pajamas are coming down the stairs.
Bananas and pajamas.
That didn't even exist.
Not good.
You are high.
Let's go to Christine. She's on line six, although you already kind of spoiled it for us, Kevin. But let's hear what Christine has to say.
Hey, Christine.
Hello?
Hi.
Good morning. I used to watch Bananas and Pajamas. Like, me and my brother used to fight over that show. He didn't like it. I loved it.
He was right. It's awful.
And pajamas are coming down.
It doesn't sound good. I'll say that.
What was the deal with why were the bananas wearing pajamas, or was that never explained?
I don't know. Maybe it was because they danced around. I don't know what it was, but they were freaking awesome.
They weren't.
I mean, like, who would know to dance around in a banana suit would like take over everybody Saturday, even before school?
Wow.
There were a lot of drugs going on with the people who made those Saturday morning shows, I bet, right?
Oh. I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, it happened with Alice in Wonderland. Why not?
Who would come up with bananas and pajamas except for somebody high?
Well, look at any of the stuff that Sid and Marty Croft did, their live-action kid shows in the 70s with H.R. Puffin stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm Puffin stuff. I mean, it's in the title.
Christine,
the Sea Monsters.
Thank you so much for the call. Let's go to Albert, line 3, 1-800-520-1067. Albert, what's your favorite Saturday morning cartoon of all time?
Albert?
Hello, Albert.
I think he's gone.
Oh, too bad.
You were saying Voltron.
Yes. Hello, Voltron.
Yeah, try to keep up.
Where are you been, man?
Voltron, defender of the universe.
There was, during this period of time, with the success of Transformers, just a slew of robot, Japanese, animated, space, sort of.
Were they sort of copies of Transformers?
It was all sort of the same genre at the same time. And, boy, there was a ton of them. And this was probably the most successful, I think, was Voltron.
It was.
Thank you for the call, and good luck learning how to use that phone. Let's try Eric.
Star Blazers happened around that time.
Eric's on line 4. Tell me if you've heard of this one that he's calling about, Ralph.
Sure. I know Silverhawks.
Yeah, the Silverhawks.
They
were right after Thundercats.
There was a Silverhawks. I like
how they all had good themes, seems like.
Silverhawks, to me, Eric, seemed like it was just Thundercats in space, right?
Exactly, yeah. They had the same kind of team, same kind of young kids.
Right.
And they battled this kind of monster.
Yeah. I did not like Silverhawks because they had that douchebag cowboy with the guitar.
That's right.
What was his name?
It was Colonel Bluegrass.
I knew Ralph would come up with it.
Colonel Bluegrass, I think it was.
That's scary.
Horrible. Space guy in a cowboy hat singing country music. It was a nightmare.
It's everything you love.
Everything I hate in one.
Eric, thank you for the call. Let's go to Jennifer, line 5. She's going to old school, and I wanted to get her call on the air because we're getting a lot of response on the website and also in the email for this same cartoon.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi.
Which one?
Hey, so, no one's mentioned the Looney Tunes. I mean, Bugs Bunny is classic.
Here's my thing about that. They are brilliant cartoons, but they originally were released in theaters for adults, and then they started being syndicated on television, mostly in the afternoons and stuff. After school, you'd come home and watch those.
But I watched it for at least 20 years.
No, they would be on the mornings, too.
They were on the mornings, yeah.
But I think we're just talking more about shows that were sort of created for that Saturday morning television slot. But no, absolutely, those are some of the greatest cartoons ever, let alone Saturday mornings.
You watched them for 20 years, you just said.
Yeah, I know. I think I'm just
Well, they made them in the 40s. These were made, so they've been around forever.
Well, let's see. Let's make it clear. I did not watch them in the 40s.
Well, no, we're not saying that.
But early 50s.
No.
But if you're 20 years old, you could have watched them for 20 years, that's for sure.
Sure. I did have a Hong Kong Phooey lunchbox.
Wow. You're my kind of girl.
She had a lunchbox.
How about that?
We need to take another break, unfortunately. But, Ralph, do you have a top 10? Do you have your top 10? Or do you have
I
a
can come
top
up with it. I don't have it. I haven't written it down, but I know what I think are the top three greatest Saturday morning cartoons of all time.
And let me tell you what's leading at KevinandBean.com.
None of them are on this list, by the way.
You can call us at 1-800-520-106, and we'll get as many calls as we can. Here's what's leading on the website with the voting. Animaniacs, Transformers, Scooby-Doo, X-Men, and Tom and Jerry. So far, those are your big five.
Tom and Jerry blows. Muggs loves some turtle power.
I gotta tell you, Muggs was so excited about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
It was...
It's huge, right?
There are very few sort of modern classics. I mean, you look back to the 60s and 70s as the golden age of the Saturday morning cartoon, and then a little less so in the 80s and other. It gets really cluttered. There's a lot of stuff all of a sudden. But Mutant, the Turtles definitely cut through all the clutter and really made a big impression on the world.
Yeah, and still popular today.
Very
still making
so.
Movies today.
Yeah.
And by the way, the only thing more exciting than Mug and Turtle Power is producer Alex singing every word of the 35-minute Gem and the Holograms theme song.
Gem was very popular with the girls her age, yes.
Gem was a slut.
She was. She was a bad role model, in my opinion, for the girls of the era.
We are talking about the best Saturday morning cartoons of all time. What is your favorite? You can go to KevinandBean.com. And cast your vote. You can also call us now at 1-800-520-1067. And I think, Ralph, before the end of this segment, we're going to hear your three favorites. Am I right
yes,
about that?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, let's go to, so many to choose from. We'll do them real fast. Let's talk to Dave on line 2. I remember the live-action version of this show. I don't remember it as a Saturday morning cartoon. Hi, Dave.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thanks. What's your show?
How about the Chick?
Spoon!
What does spoon mean? Why did the Tick shout spoon?
Spoon. Tick realized he was a superhero who was sort of a fenderhead. He was kind of an idiot.
Yeah.
And he recognized...
He'd jump from building to building and break the roof and the parapet walls.
Yeah. Very, very funny show. Yeah, that really holds up even for adults.
Why did he yell
clever.
Spoon?
Because he realized in one episode that he needed a catchphrase. A lot of superheroes had catchphrases and he didn't have one.
That's not a catchphrase.
So he just started.
That's a utensil.
Good. Spoon! He would just yell that as he fought crime.
That's stupid.
It's a very funny show. It's with a very adult sensibility. So
thank you, Dave.
That's an excellent choice.
Let's try Bernie on line 4. He's got one I've never heard of. I'm sure, Ralph, you have. Hi, Bernie. What's going on? Welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, fellas. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Good.
Eek the Cat.
Eek the Cat was a very funny show, too,
Eek
yes.
Eek the Cat.
Yeah, was that in the early 90s, I guess?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Good show.
All right.
And what was Eek's deal, Ralph? Did he have superpowers?
No, he was a scaredy cat, basically.
What?
Hence Eek.
Oh.
All right, let's go to John, line 5. John's he's got a classic that a lot of other people are also weighing in with today.
Hey, party people. My favorite by far was Johnny Quest.
Johnny Quest is number 2 on my list of top 5 of all time.
Is that right?
Wow.
Johnny Quest was one of the best written TV shows, let alone animation shows of its era.
Really?
Yeah. It's like a little action-adventure film in every episode. They did a great job with that show. Wasn't a comedy, wasn't funny, but the great characters, well-drawn, and just
it was
really,
real sci-fi, right?
Sci-fi. Yeah. Yeah, it was like Indiana Jones kind of stuff, you know? And Johnny was a kid whose dad was a scientist, and he would get caught up in these adventures with his best friend Haji, a little Indian kid.
Haji!
And Rafe Bannon, who was his sort of bodyguard. And it was really a unique, different kind of show for that time, and there wasn't a lot. There was a lot of copycat stuff going on, but Johnny Quest really stood alone, and a great theme song, too.
All right.
Anyway, if you ever hear that.
What about the King of Mexico who says that Johnny Quest sucked, that he hated the Indian? What about that?
Oh, no. Johnny Quest was awesome. And if you ever watch a very funny cartoon called The Venture Brothers, which is on Adult Swim, I guess, now, it is a straight spoof of Johnny Quest, and they do a very funny job of it.
I bet if you sat down in a room, Ralph, you could probably name 100 Saturday morning cartoons, but I am so amazed by how many are coming in that I've never heard of. What the hell is Tennessee Tuxedo? That's the show?
I love Tennessee Tuxedo so much. I forgot all about Tennessee Tuxedo.
What is
it? And his pal Chumley. Tennessee Tuxedo.
This is from Tony.
Tennessee Tuxedo was voiced by the great Don Adams, who was Maxwell Smart and Get Smart.
Right.
And he and his pal Chumley, who was a walrus, he was a penguin.
Chumley
was his walrus buddy, and they lived in the zoo. And whenever they had like a question about how things worked or whatever, they would just walk out of the zoo. They would just leave and go see their pal Phineas J. Whoopi, who was a professor and a scientist who would answer all their questions. And
very nice.
So the catchphrase was, Phineas J. Whoopi, you're the greatest. He would say
Tony
that all the time.
Is also throwing his support behind McGilla Gorilla, also Underdog and Jabberjaw. Another one of his
Jabberjaw. Oh,
you love all these
stuff. Speed Buggy. It makes me think of Speed Buggy because Jabberjaw and Speed Buggy used to be right up against each other.
What's happening right now? All right, let's go to Brandon. Line six. How can your favorite cartoon of all time be something that I've never heard of?
Captain Brandon. Planet Blue, Brandon.
Well, you haven't heard of any of them, Bean. You never watch TV in the morning.
No, but I read and I hear stuff. What the hell is Captain Planet, Brandon?
When the five powers combine, they summon Earth's greatest champion, Captain Planet.
What deal?
Go Screw Planet. Smokey the Bear.
Go Planet. Did you say Screw Smokey the Bear?
Yes, Captain Planet is probably the greatest superhero environmentalist ever.
He was
quite a category.
He was an eco-friendly environmentalist superhero who would teach kids how to save the planet. It was horrible, Brandon.
It sounds like a public service announcement more than a cartoon.
It was one long PSA. It was like going to school. I hated that goddamn cartoon. Keep your water clean. Screw you, Captain Planet. Nice piece of trivia, though. The first season of Captain Planet, was voiced by Tom Cruise.
Is that right?
No kidding.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to hear Ralph's three favorites. You already mentioned one. Number two is Johnny Quest. But let's not even bother going to Adam on the phone because I know you yell at him. Is Batman a Saturday morning cartoon? He's putting in a vote for that.
He's probably talking about the Batman the Animated Series, which was a brilliant animated show, and it was Saturday morning.
So, a Saturday morning, so that would count.
So that's the more recent one.
All right, Ralph, let's hear from you. You've I got my top five here. You've dedicated many, many years to Saturday morning cartoons. What are the best in your opinion?
In my opinion, going fifth to first, so the fifth best Saturday morning cartoon of all time, in my opinion, was Josie and the Pussycats. Josie was a chick who had her own rock trio, and they would travel around the world and also fight crime.
Josie and the Pussycats.
So they would go around and sing and then fight
crime? They'd go on tour, and then every city they would tour in, eventually something would happen. They'd have to solve a crime or whatever.
Okay.
It was
now,
great.
Was part of that for you, Ralph, that was your sexual awakening to see these hot chicks playing rock and roll music?
They were so hot, but I also thought it was cool that at that time, when that came out, it must have been in the late 60s, early 70s, there was no really female lead in a cartoon series. It was all sort of boy-based, so it was very novel and interesting to watch a girl sort of call the shots.
All right. That's number five.
For me, number four was Rocky and Bullwinkle. Rocky and Bullwinkle, which had so many great elements to it. You had the Rocky and Bullwinkle show, of course, and then you also had Sherman and Peabody. Sure. Remember, they would do the Wayback Machine and all that stuff. Just really cleverly well-written stuff, even for kids. I thought that show was great.
All right.
Third for me was the Super Friends. As you can imagine, as a comic book geek growing up, the Super Friends introduced a whole generation of kids to the Justice League of America. Superman, Batman, Aquaman, Wonder Woman. These became sort of the biggest superheroes in the world because this show was so popular.
In the Great Hall of the Justice League, there are assembled the world's four greatest heroes, created from the cosmic legends of the universe.
Superman!
They took out Osama.
They did. That was them, yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Number two, as I mentioned, Johnny Quest was great. But I think number one has to be, and it is the most influential Saturday morning cartoon still to this day across the board.
Can I guess?
Number one.
Sure.
Scooby-Dooby-Doo.
That's it.
Where are you?
That would be my guess.
We got some work to do now. Scooby-Dooby-Doo.
It invented that template of a bunch of kids going around solving mysteries. It had never existed before, if you can believe it.
There were kids
who were going out fighting crime and solving mysteries, and then it seemed like every cartoon after that, there was some element of that where they would get together and solve a mystery or fight crime.
And they were also smoking weed in Havana a lot, right?
Yeah, there was a lot of drug, sort of veiled drug references to the Scooby snacks, and Shaggy was a full-blown stoner before anybody even knew what was going on. Hell, he thought his dog was talking to him. That's how stoned he was.
Well, we have barely scratched the surface with how much people love their Saturday morning cartoons. And in case you're wondering, by the way, as of right now, Animaniacs still topping the poll at KevinBean.com is the all-time greatest Saturday morning cartoon. Well, so we're going to be done with it on the air for right now, but you can certainly go to the website and vote if you want. We'll take a quick break. Ralph's got the showbiz beat coming up next.
I think I have talent on some level.
Okay, now that's the voice of Rebecca Black, 13 at the time. A lot of people disagreed with her assessment that she had some talent at some level when she had the worldwide internet sensation called Friday.
It's Friday, Friday, gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend.
I thought we had heard the last of Rebecca Black, but apparently she was offered to DJ Omar Khan at the MTV Video Music Awards Roundtable the other day, and you did the right thing, and you said, hey, let me talk to her.
No, absolutely. And you know what, you guys, what we forgot to mention is that, man, it is a hip-hop nation. We were the only station there.
No question.
We were the only rock station there.
The world is that way. Radios are that way. Cities are that way. That's just the way of the world.
Yeah. So the roundtable was from noon to 5, and I live in a 909, so it was like, you know, 3 o'clock. I'm sticking around till the end, just, you know, hanging out. So it was about an hour where nobody even came by to our station because, you know, I mean, Little Twist is going to talk to, you know, K-Rock.
Right.
So it's about 5 o'clock and Rebecca Black walks in. I'm like, oh, gold! I have to talk to her,
right? Can you make that sound again? Okay.
And then so she sits down at this pop station, okay? And this is kind of like what sets me off. Is that they treated her like a real artist, and they were excited to talk to her. Yeah,
like she's Katy Perry or
somebody? Yeah, like the two hosts started singing the song, like, oh, it's Rebecca Black. And I was like, oh, no, are you kidding me? So we had the engineer. I was like, because Rebecca Black wasn't going to talk to us.
Of course.
So I had the engineer. I'm like, dude, we need to go talk to her. So her people came up to me. He's like, hey, you know, you guys are from the Kevin and Bean Show. We know how you guys are. Oh. She's 14. I was like, I'll be super nice to her.
Oh, no.
Yeah, totally, totally.
I didn't know that part.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was like, I got this, you know.
Don't worry about it.
It'll be cool.
So this is Omar and 14-year-old Rebecca Black.
First of all, what day is it today?
It's Friday. It is Friday.
Oh, come on. You have to give it to me.
No.
It's what made you, and you're not going to. It's Friday.
Oh.
A little something. Come on. You got to hook me up or I'm not moving on.
He wants her to sing.
Friday, gotta get down on Friday.
That's what I'm talking about.
Makes her sing. Sits there and waits and says, I'm not going to move on.
Did not want to sing. She looked at me like, no way. And I'm just like, oh, but I'm not going anywhere.
I got all day.
Yeah, exactly, dude. I was like, I want to hear it. You know what I'm saying?
That's a terrible thing to do to somebody, though, Omar, to put them on the spot. But you don't go up to somebody and make them sing their one hit when they're one hit wonder.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, yes, you do.
You do for Omar.
And then he proceeds to tell her, you know, our opinion of her music.
I particularly, and my bosses, and, you know, we're a rock station, really don't like the pop music, and we don't like how they're taking people and, you know, just kind of like, you know, making them stars, you know, just because they pay for it. What do you have to say to people who actually, you know, do feel that way?
Well, I mean, it just, that's...
I mean, this, all I did it was...
All right, good enough. Wow.
Yeah.
Now, were her people staring at you yet?
Not yet.
They weren't?
Not yet, not yet. Or maybe
you made
I was...
her sing? They must not have been paying attention. You
maybe.
Made her sing, and you told her that we didn't like her music.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was still all good.
Okay. So then, Omar starts to talk about the lyrics of the Friday song. He's really going in-depth with Rebecca Black.
Because I'm not going to burn any bridges here.
Let's talk about the lyrics to that song, which are brilliant.
You have to know that those lyrics are ridiculous.
Well, I mean, they're simple.
Yeah, but come on. What comes after Thursday, Friday, then Saturday, then Sunday?
Know. Just
say the lyrics are dumb.
Would you say dumb? I won't say they're dumb. I mean, because I really just thought, you know what, this is my last try at this, and if it doesn't work out, then whatever.
You're 14. How could this be your last try at it?
I don't know.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Your last try? You're 14.
But the thing is,
you got your rest of your life in front of you.
All right, so he starts out forcing her to say that the lyrics are dumb, and then he's upset that she's not going to stick with it longer.
Yeah. What's her deal, dude? Come on.
You hated the song she did.
Yeah.
She should stop.
Yes.
When she admits that she should stop, you turn and go the other direction and go, you're only 14. You should hang on to this forever.
It is funny, though, Omar, that she made it sound like this has been a lifelong struggle. I put decades into this, but I'm at my wit's end here. If it doesn't hit this time, I'm getting out of the business.
Man, it took for everything in my body to not just unleash the wrath of, you know, my hate on her. I was pretty nice for me.
For you.
For
yeah,
me.
You're a hell of a nicer person than you are to those of us that work with you.
Yeah.
But for her, it must have been torture.
I don't care.
A, you made her sing.
Yeah.
B, you told her the lyrics were stupid and you wanted to get her to admit it.
Yeah.
Now you're yelling at her because she's not going to stick to it.
That's right. I think at this point, you know, the people, her people started looking at me kind of like, oh, you wrap it up, wrap it up.
How about the cut sign?
Yeah.
Now, I respect your honesty. I'm glad it wasn't just another, like, suck up, oh, you're great, hey, what's next for you? I respect that. But was there a tiny, like, voice in the back of your head going, dude, she's 14. Seriously, cut her some slack.
No.
Omar, I'd like to speak for Omar. He used to have that voice, Bean, up until about 4 or 5 years ago, and since then it has been quenched.
That's right.
It's gone.
I hope, like, in the future she looks back at this interview and thinks, oh, you know what? That dude was right.
He did me a favor.
That's right. You know?
All right.
I want you to admit that Friday lyrics are not smart.
Okay, so after all of that now, because she wouldn't admit that the Friday lyrics aren't smart or dumb, now he's going back to it and making her admit it again.
Yeah.
I'm not going to diss on my own song. You're not going to get me to do that.
Come on.
Yeah.
So she rebuffed you, and she said no. She would not agree that the song was dumb.
Yeah, but I continued. Is the next clip you have is... Oh.
No, that's it.
Okay.
That's it. That's Omar and Rebecca Black.
Yeah.
But she couldn't have been happy.
But he was ecstatic.
We've been there, and you can tell, like, they'll get up and they'll walk right over to their people and go.
Yeah. Not until that point did I think, oh my God, I thought I was like, oh, I'm wasting my time. This sucks. And then when this happened, I was like, yes, it was all worth it.
Wait a minute, though. You with Rebecca Black was all worth it.
Yeah.
But you with Everlast was all worth it as well. Let's be honest.
Speaking of guitar, you know, you had, you know, one of your biggest hits that we play on K-Rock. The name escapes me. What's it like? Sorry.
What it's like.
What it's like.
Hey, party people. Thanks a lot for tuning into the Kevin and Bean Show on a Tuesday. Ralph Garman, I'm glad you're in here.
Oh, thank you. Hello.
Check 1, 2. Hello. Hello.
Got a clip. What is this, Kevin? This is from the Movie Beat last week?
This is from the Movie Beat yesterday when Ralph was recapping the top 10.
Okay.
And, his thoughts on Contagion.
Top 10 movies at the box office this weekend. Contagion was number one. Brand new film from Steven Soderbergh with Matt Damon. $23.1 million. Made it number one. I think people went just to see Gwyneth Paltrow die a horrible death. That's my guess.
It's my guess.
That's what they want to see her seize and die. I'd pay $15 if that's all they showed me. If it was a 2-minute segment, an IMAX 3D of Gwyneth Paltrow dying on a gurney, I would say, here is my money, sir.
Why do you hate her so much?
Good morrow to you, I would say.
The question that was not answered is, why do you hate her so much? And I have to spring to my Gwynnie's defense because, you know, I love her.
What?
What?
See, I was indifferent until you said My Gwinnie. Now I gotta side with Ralph.
She's beautiful. She's talented. She's a great actress. She's a terrific singer. She seems like a really nice person. What's the hate about Gwyneth Paltrow? I don't understand where this hate comes from. And I know that you're not alone on this. I know there's a whole bunch of people out there that hate her, but why?
Because she has been jammed down our throats as this superstar, movie star. And it's like being saying, oh, she's a great singer. She's a great actress. No, not really. Not a great singer. Did you see her sing live on the Oscars last year?
I thought she was really good. Oof. I thought she was really good.
Oof. Fine. Actress? Fine.
Yeah, she's not bad at either.
Beautiful? No.
No. Except for an Iron Man.
Fine. She's not a movie star. She's never starred in a movie that where she was the reason the movie was a hit. If anything, she sort of coattails other successful films. She has smaller roles in movies that do well because of the premise or the real star of the movie, like Iron Man or something like that. She's just fine, and yet she's treated as this Hollywood royalty. Oh, she's this brilliant actress, and she sings, and she's multi-talented, and she's stylish, and she will tell us how to live our lives via her website, Goop. And she will give you all the advice you need about how to make your life worth living because she eats yogurt, and she stretches every morning. Like, F you, shut up and go away.
Is it mostly her website, Goop?
Like no, if she has that never is done representative that. Of her entire persona. That website represents everything that I dislike about her. That sense of entitlement that has that rarefied world she lives in, and yet she tries to say she's just one of us. She's a common person who will give you all the basic life advice that you need. Shut up and die in contagion.
But there are actually rich people in the world, and maybe her website is for them. Is that a crime that she's talking about things that maybe a lot of people can't afford, but a lot of people can?
She doesn't position it that way. She positions that website as, this is for you, ladies. This is for the common ladies. Here you go. I'm going to help you.
You working mothers.
You working mothers.
Can't get everything done.
Your macrobiotic goat milk out for your kids and pour it over the twigs and berries that I serve my kids for breakfast. And it is just, it's a big lie. She's so out of touch. And she has been given this, she's been anointed with this crown that she wears, and I can't understand why.
The next time you're in Paris, here's a good restaurant.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Nothing like croissants with the rising sun over the Seine. As I was saying to Chris the other day, you should try it too, ladies. Well, F you, because it's all I can do to give my kid a cold Pop-Tart and get him to school on time with the carpool.
All right, let me ask you this. She said she's out of touch. Do you think she genuinely believes she is trying to help with
yes,
this advice?
I do.
Or do you think she's trying to stick everybody's, you know, rub everybody's face in that she's better than
that? She's clueless. At worst, she's devious. But she may just be stupid, which is another reason I think not to be
hey, I'm
fond
stupid.
Of her.
You don't hate me.
Yeah, but you don't go around saying, oh, live like me. Wear shorts all the time and striped shirts and lose your key card and lock your keys outside
your
house.
Some good things about me, too.
There are some good things about
me. So half of it sounds like, Ralph, is that you think she's way too big a star for her talent. You think that's blown way out of proportion.
Yes,
her success.
Absolutely.
Kind of like how for so many years it used to drive me crazy that Dane Cook could sell out 3 nights at Madison Square Garden because he's not funny. It's the same sort of thing. Like, how did this happen that this person is so popular and doesn't deserve it? That's part of it.
At the top of my head, I could list you 10 actresses that are her contemporaries that crush her in the talent department. Absolutely don't have nearly the fame or the reputation that she has in Hollywood.
Did it tick you off when she won an Oscar for Shakespeare in Love?
No, I thought that was a great performance. And again, in a film that was largely supported by Joseph Fiennes and Ben Affleck and a bunch of other good performances, she's fine when she's cast well. She's fine, but she certainly isn't a movie star in the sense of, like, she didn't deliver like a Charlize Theron performance in Monster, for example, where she carried the film and was blew everybody away with that given performance. I thought it was a fine performance. I had no problem with her winning the Oscar.
Let's go to the
phones. That's the last time she's done anything of note. When's the last time you said, oh, a new Gwyneth Paltrow movie? Oh, I can't wait to get in there this week and get to the box office and give them my money because I got to see the new Gwyneth Paltrow movie.
Not because of her, but in Iron Man, I thought she looked great and was great.
But you didn't go for Gwyneth Paltrow.
Not at all.
And could any other actress been cast as Pepper Potts in that film and served it just as well?
Probably.
Definitely.
Let's take a call. The number's 1-800-520-1067. Stephanie would like to weigh in. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, and also, who names their kid Apple? That's kind of annoying on a female side.
Again, I think that's indicative of her just thinking, oh, I'm so special, and my children are going to be named special things. I'm going to name them after fruit, and it's going to be wonderful, and I'm unique, and I live in this magical kingdom.
I feel bad for that kid.
Yeah, I do, too. That kid's going to get beat up.
Stephanie, did you have any kind of an opinion on Gwyneth Paltrow before she named her kid Apple?
I thought she was okay, but I never actually heard of her until, what, Shakespeare in Love? And
yeah,
that was okay, but...
Well, here's the thing, though. It does do a disservice to people like her that the hype is so ridiculously high. Then you have to go, look, I didn't care about her, but don't give me all this hype about her. Now you have to kind of go the other direction.
But
on
where's
her.
All the hype coming
you,
from?
Who's creating? You.
My Gwynnie.
You.
My Gwynnie.
She is my sweet Gwynnie. But who's, thank you for the call, Stephanie. Who's creating the hype, though? I mean, is some of it just that she is a tabloid target, so you see her, pictures of her everywhere? That's not really her fault.
I'll tell you, this website of hers really has been her downfall. That was the final nail in the coffin for a lot of people.
That's where you realize what her mindset is.
There's a fake Twitter account on Twitter. You should look it up if you get a chance, called Pepper Paltrow. With Pepper Potts was the name of the character she played in Iron Man, so they call it Pepper Paltrow. And it is someone writing hilarious tweets as if it's from Gwyneth Paltrow about everyday occurrences and how you should live your life. For example, they'll tweet, oh, lazy Sunday, sitting on the couch watching Lion King with the kids. Only bad part was feeding the entire cast an orchestra at intermission. You know, so she's got the Broadway version in her living room. That's the mentality. Like, she's trying to tell you she's this every person, but she is living this ridiculous lifestyle.
All right, 1-800-520-1067. I'm sure you have all of your own reasons why you hate Gwyneth Paltrow. We want to hear about them. Coming up next on the Kevin and Bean Show. I'm a little nervous looking at these Kevin and Bean Facebook comments. The topic is, why do people hate Gwyneth Paltrow? And I think, honestly, Ralph, if you were to give the sign to start putting torches up and heading toward the castle and taking care of her, I think they'd do it on your command. I really do.
Trust me, it's on the Garmy's list of things to do. We have a hit list, and she's on it.
Kara writes in, I can't explain it. She just looks like she smells bad. And there's definitely something wrong with her neck. I'm with you, Ralph. She's just awful. Janine, yes, I can't stand her face, her voice. I even hate her husband and kids. I know it's not rational, but it's true.
Yes, wow, you just causes hate.
That's ridiculous.
Jessica says, and then we'll go to your calls, 1-800-520-1067. Gwyneth Paltrow is pretentious. The Oscar she won is a slap in the face of people who actually have talent. She didn't do anything Oscar-worthy in that film. She did show her boobs, by the way. I think she should get some points for that.
You know, in a scene in the movie,
they're not spectacular boobs.
When a demon or the devil takes a human form and walks into a room and all the people are fooled by it, but the dogs go, that's what's happening. People just, they don't know why. They're just going to sense that she's evil and wrong and bad and you should hate her.
Not positive what it
not
is.
Not sure, but you can tell underneath that seemingly angelic exterior, there's something evil going on there.
Let's try line four. John's going to get us into an area we have not yet discussed about Gwyneth Paltrow. Hi, John. Welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show. Thanks for holding on. What's going on?
Hey, good morning, Kevin and Bean. Good morning, Lisa, Ralph. How you doing?
Good.
Good. You know, I think a lot of her charm just comes from the people she's dated and who her parents are. I think that's how, you know, she got thrust into the limelight.
She is,
you
one know, of those people who was born on third base and thinks she hit a triple. That's for sure.
So, in other words, she dated Ben Affleck, if I remember correctly,
and
right?
Brad
she dated
Pitt.
Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt, yeah.
And then she married a rock star. Do you think some of it is just jealousy from people that she's had this life where she's had so much handed to her or has been in situations where she gets to live the dream?
I think she's been in the right place at the right time in the right movies. And I think people just kind of are annoyed that, you know, you have other actors that are, you know, working harder and, you know, get less respect just because, you know, they're not dating. They're not on, you know, the front page of, you know, the news magazines. I think that's what it is.
Her first movie role was given to her by her godfather, Steven Spielberg.
I think people wouldn't be jealous so much if she understood that. And was always grateful and always put that out there and said, look, I know I'm lucky or whatever, but she doesn't seem to really have that.
Let's try Jim. He's on line two, joining us on the Kevin and Bean Show. Jim, why do you hate Gwyneth Paltrow?
Good morning, K-Rock.
Hey, Jim.
Hey, if you recall a few years back, she introduced Anthony Hopkins for some Lifetime Achievement Award on the Oscars.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And number one, she thought she was the Queen of England. And number two, she started calling him Anferny.
Anfernee.
And I was thinking, yeah, you have to go back and look at the
Wait,
clip.
Wait, A-N-F-E-R?
Yes.
What?
Go back. I
would expect that from Tracy Morgan, but not from Gwyneth Paltrow.
And everybody was thinking, what's going on? They even had a close-up of Anthony. He was like, are they introducing me or somebody else?
You know, I thought she said Anthony.
I thought she said Anthony, too.
Anthony, maybe Anthony, maybe you're right.
That's
but it
funny.
Was not Anthony, which is his name, I believe.
And if it's a Lifetime Achievement Award, I don't know, learn how to say the
name. Get it right.
Google it.
All right, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Tiana, line one. Hi, Tiana. Thanks for calling the Kevin and Bean Show. What's going on?
Hi, guys. Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
I find it irritating that she speaks Spanish like a Spaniard. She claims to be fluent after having lived in Spain for a year as a teenager, and it drives me crazy.
Well, is she fluent?
Is she not fluent when she speaks Spanish?
No.
Does she do it poorly?
It's not great, number one. And number two, she uses the Spanish list, which, again, like a minuscule percentage of the Spanish-speaking world speaks Spanish that way.
Right. She uses the Castilian lisp?
Exactly. Yeah. It drives me crazy.
Yeah, that is pretentious.
It is. It's totally pretentious.
That's or that's how she was taught to speak Spanish because she lived in Spain, though.
Well, but it's sort of like if you learned how to speak English in Great Britain and then moved to Australia, you would not maintain a British accent in Australia.
Wow. We're cutting it pretty thin here for looking at reasons.
No, it's true.
Gwyneth.
If I lived in England for a year, I wouldn't come back and say, oh, I say, fellas, should we take the lift up and get a cup of tea?
If you would, we would slap you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Let's try Tanya. Tanya's on line six. Gwyneth Paltrow, why do you hate her? By the way, Gwyn writes in on the Kevin and Bean Facebook page, hater, hater, hater. Ever since she became popular, now everybody calls me Gwyneth. It's not my name, people. It's Gwyn. It's an awful old person's name. She has no talent. She's way too skinny. I hate her even more when she married Chris Martin and naming her kids dumb names. There you go, Ralph. Team Garmy forever.
There
says
we go.
This is weird because I just was indifferent. Just didn't care. She was just not on my radar.
Didn't have your finger on the pulse, sir.
Didn't care. Whatever. She does her website. Never been there. So, but now I'm starting to realize.
Yes. Now you're hating her, too.
I'm joining the Garmy.
Good man.
let's see. Let's go to Tanya. Hi, Tanya.
Hi. Yep. She's purely hateable.
Okay. Because
the one that killed me was that there was an article in some decorating magazine and it was things that you can't live without.
Mm-hmm.
And she couldn't live without $50,000 worth of wallpaper.
Oh.
Wow.
She put a price on it. She told people it was $50,000.
No, the website, you know, went into further detail, but it's some hand painted wallpaper and that was for one wall.
And she can't live without that.
She can't live without the wallpaper, the hand-painted wallpaper.
For one wall, $50,000.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
See, she's just clueless, or she's just arrogant, one or the other.
Tanya, thank you for the call. We'll give Hector in the email the final word. Number one reason to hate Gwyneth Paltrow, no boobs.
That is true.
Gwyneth. You're rich. Buy some, bitch.
Get them.
It sounds like these time and time again.
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ, and it is 8 minutes after 7 o'clock.
You are listening to the Kevin Bean Show on a Tuesday, a very special Tuesday for Foo Fighters fans. Today is the day that Wasting Light comes out, available in stores and for download. Dave Grohl joins us back in the studio on the Kevin Bean Show.
I'm
hey, David,
back.
How you been, man?
Seems like forever.
Pretty good. I missed you guys. I've been sleeping in my car in the parking lot the last 5 days.
That's sad. I wondered who that was.
That's me.
We just thought it was another poor homeless guy.
That's me.
Last time we talked to you was before the big event last Tuesday night. How did it go?
It went really well. I think that the 3D performance was super fun.
Uh-huh.
Maybe we can do that instead of touring all the time. What do you think?
Oh, there you go.
Just stay in your studio.
Yeah, it's right down the street from my house. Just go there and play a gig and put it in a theater and whatever town.
It doesn't seem as good, but...
No, it wouldn't be as fun.
Well, you told us last week that Wasting Light you thought was the best album you've ever made. How come?
You know, I feel like at this point, this is our 7th album, and... Every time we make a record, it's kind of a response to the one that came before it. So, like, the last couple records, we've really experimented with different instrumentation and dynamic, and we went there with the piano, and we went there with the string section, and we went there with the mandolin, and all of those things I think were necessary to keep the band going, you know, just to experiment with things that we hadn't done before. But this time it felt like, okay... We're making the record with Butch Vig. Butch Vig is a genius producer, but he's really great at making huge rock records. So He trims all the fat. He'll play a song for him, and he'll say, "Okay, you don't really need to do this, 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 and this. You just
really
need
specific.
This." Yeah.
Wow.
Why are you doing that? Don't do that. Just do this. And he helps you simplify it so that it becomes like a bigger, better version of the song. And so basically, over the years, we've experimented in all these different directions, and it was kind of like stretching a rubber band, and you let it go, and it just snaps back. And I listen to the record, and it just sounds like the last 16 years to me. It has elements of almost every album, and Pat Smear's back with us and playing on the record, and the songs are bigger, and the choruses are bigger. I actually, this time, as I was writing the songs, just when I thought I'd have a song finished and I thought the chorus was big enough, I'd try to write a bigger chorus, and I would use that chorus as a pre-chorus.
Ah, so you have to top
it. It's like
it.
A Bee Gees song, you know? Bee Gees songs, there's like five choruses. Just when you think you're at the chorus, you're not, because there's a bigger one. And then there's a bigger one.
I didn't see the Bee Gees coming today. I got to be honest with you.
Dude, I like the Bee Gees.
All right.
I do.
Okay.
And
who doesn't? Yeah, what about thinking America doesn't like the Bee Gees? Come on.
But that to me was really, when I listen to it, I just feel like it's the version of the band that people will recognize the most, you know, and it's kind of like the best representation of our identity. You know, some bands have an album like this in their career where they've made five or six records, and then all of a sudden you get like Metallica's Black Album,
right?
Or they've made like four or five records, and you get all of a sudden you get Back in Black or something, and it's that one record you listen to that you hear that identity the most, you know? And to me, that's this record. It just sounds like...
Well, none of the choruses are bigger than on the opening track for Wasting Light, which is called Bridge Burning. Tell us a little bit about that, and then we want to hear some of it.
Bridge Burning was a riff that I came up with, I don't know, a couple years ago. And it's really just a simple kind of rock riff. But I wanted the album to open with a bang, you know? I always like having big openers on albums, and those are the songs that people go banana. It's always nice to have a killer opener on the album that you can then also open the show with.
Right.
Like All My Life. When that record came out, when One by One came out, and we started every show with dug-dug-dug-dug-dug, people would go totally bananas. Yep. Right out of the gate. And Bridge Burning is one of those songs where I just know the house lights are going to go out, and it's going to start with that weird guitar sound. And when the drums kick in, it's just going to go bananas. And with that chorus, I just felt like, okay, we have to have a huge anthemic chorus right at the beginning of the record. And it's a really powerful song. I dig it.
Foo Fighters, that is called Bridge Burning. That is out of the CD is out today, by the way. You can get it today, finally, after all
this
time.
You get the whole song, not just the part you just heard. You can actually hear the whole thing.
There's 11 of them.
How about that?
11 songs?
Awesome. Now, it sounds like we were just talking about writing the bridge and writing for... It sounds like you write specifically so that when you get on stage, that song is going to work great. Some bands write whatever, and then they figure out how to do it on stage, but it sounds like you're writing for the stage.
Well... Kind of in a way, I think that when you come up with a riff or you have a song idea that starts to really, it becomes something bigger than just a riff idea, you start to design it so that everyone can play along, you know? And to me, when we go out and we do big arena shows or festivals or stadiums or whatever, the audience is just as much a part of the show as the band. And when you're in a space that big with that many people and you play a song like Best of You or Everlong or whatever, and everyone starts singing along, that's an incredible moment. And it's those kind of moments that people take home with them. Not so much your lasers or your light show or the smoke or the, you know, it's like there was that one moment where everybody sang along to Bridge Burning, or that one moment where... The first line, he goes, "These are my famous last words," and everyone sang it. It was like that's how you get goosebumps.
Right.
And so when you start to realize that a song is going to be one of those songs on the record, you know, you want to make sure that it's available to everyone, that you like extend your hand to the listener, that they become a part of the song too. And that's always been important to me. I like a lot of bands that that are a lot more sort of introverted or insular and that don't really that don't care about the listener.
Yeah.
I do. And it's just part of what we do as a band, you know.
It's nice to know that the goosebumps are, we know they're happening in the audience. It's neat to hear you say that it's happening for the performers on
dude,
stage,
I get
too.
It. I mean,
just as much a moment for you as it is for us.
When I'm on stage, I mean, I'm standing at the lip of the stage looking at that many people sing those songs. And it's incredible. Every time, it never gets old.
Every time a crowd sings, they try to speed it up, though. Is that difficult?
Actually,
it seems like they start going faster.
There's some countries that have better time than others.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Like the Italians and the Spanish, they've got pretty good time.
Okay. Who's bad?
Belgians? I don't know.
Not so
maybe,
good.
Maybe.
I'm sure you've seen, as I have, Bruce Springsteen begging his audience to not clap along.
Oh, really?
They always end up getting out of whack.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. I can imagine. He
Wasting
is the boss,
Light
after all.
Yeah. Is the name of the new album. Dave Grohl is here with us on the Kevin and Bean Show. We're going to go through some more of it with Dave when we return right after. Welcome back to the Kevin and Bean Show, talking about Wasting Light, the new long-awaited album from Foo Fighters, in stores and available for download today. Dave Grohl is back in studio with us on the Kevin and Bean Show, because it's been a week since he stopped by, so frankly, we missed you. How long had it been, Dave, since an all-new record of all-new material from you?
God, I don't know. I guess that the last record came out in 2007, maybe?
Wow, so it's been a couple of years. All right.
Yeah, we intentionally got... stepped back from it and took a break. We started feeling like it was time. We hadn't really taken any time off for, it was about 5 or 6 years in a row. We went from the double album straight into the next record, Echoes, Silence, Patience, and Grace. Both of those albums we toured about 2 years apiece for. We did the acoustic stuff in the middle of all of that, and it was just like, but more than that, we started feeling like, you know, maybe we should give the listeners a break. All we do is make records and put songs on the radio, and people have been doing, they've been listening to us for so long. Maybe it's time that,
you know,
we should wait till they actually want it.
Do you know what happens when you give us that break? We play Under the Bridge by the Red Hot Chili Peppers again.
Not that there's anything wrong with that song, by the way.
It's a great song.
But I'm just saying, from our standpoint, we don't need a break.
Well, you're welcome again.
All right, let's get back into the new record. We want to play some clips from some songs that people haven't heard yet. There's one with I assume it's a made-up word or it's an old girlfriend's name, Arlandria.
No,
what the hell is that about?
It's funny. We almost named the record Arlandria, but everyone was what the hell is Arlandria is the place in Virginia where I used to live. It's in between Arlington and Alexandria. It's
no kidding.
Yeah, it's this really small part of town. It's called Arlandria. And so... you know, having grown up in Virginia, I like to go back to Virginia because it just makes me feel like myself, you know? And like when Nirvana first became popular, whenever I felt like things were too crazy, I just go back to Virginia. And I'd go and hang out with people that I'd had slumber parties with in second grade. And
you still got a place back there too, right? You still got a home.
You know, I actually got rid of it about 4 or 5 years ago. My mother still has her place there. So I go back and stay in the bedroom where I grew up. But I got rid of the house and live full-time here in Los Angeles now. But Arlandria, I mean, when I wanted to name the song that because it's all about trying to retain that sort of sanity or that stability because I feel like I'm a pretty down-to-earth person. But I can see how you could get swept up in the whole rock and roll thing and lose sight of the things that are really important. And Arlandria, that's meant to represent what's really important to me.
It's brand new Foo Fighters on the Kevin and Bean Show. Dave Grohl is joining us this morning and talking about the new CD. And it's available today as well.
There you go.
Wasting Light is what it's called. One of the clips that I saw, I haven't had a chance to see the documentary yet that you screened last week, Back and Forth. But one of the clips that I thought was fascinating was showing you guys recording the song we're going to hear from next called These Days.
The way
it came together in the studio, all the different pieces that you tried out. Much more collaborative than I think I imagined it would be.
I know. I'm starting to get the vibe that people think that I'm just like a musical Hitler or something like that.
That may be a little strong.
Really, really disappointing. No, I mean, you know, the way it works in this band is everyone's allowed to bring in whatever they have to the songs, you know?
And then you say no.
And then I just say no. That's not how I imagined it to be. No, I mean, basically, I'll come up with a really simple song structure riff idea. It usually starts with Taylor and I, where I'll have a melodic riff idea, and then I'll go in and say, hey, T, let's do a demo of this really quick. And we'll come up with a tempo and a rhythm, and then I'll work on it a little more. And then once it becomes something that we should take seriously, then everybody comes in. And, you know, I don't tell Nate how to play the bass, really, because he's a bass player and I'm not. And,
right. And
the way it works with Pat and Chris and I'm a rhythm guitarist, you know. I play the guitar like it's a drum set. I play the low strings like kicks and snares, and I play the high strings like cymbals. So I take care of that rhythm thing. Chris Shiflett is a really precise and clean melodic dude, you know. He's the best guitar player in the band. That guy can rip. He's a really good guitar. And then you've got Pat, who puts on a guitar and it just goes. And so if you put those three things together, you know, and the composition is there, it becomes a really cool. So you want to have, everybody needs their own space to do their own thing. But at the end of the day, it's like, if I feel like something isn't working with the foundation idea of the song, then I'll say, nah, let's try something else. So,
well, let's hear what you ended up coming up with. This is a clip from These Days, new Foo Fighters here on the Kevin and Bean Show.
Foo Fighters on the Kevin and Bean Show. Dave Grohl is joining us today. Of course, the CD is available today as well. And we are going to talk about one more song with you. I Should Have Known is the name of it.
Yeah.
Tell us about that one.
I Should Have Known is a riff that's been around for a long time. A lot of these songs, some of these songs were written on sound checks for the last album when we were on tour. We had this sound check policy. Don't sound check songs you're going to do every night. Use that sound check time to write new material. So Rope was one of the songs that we wrote three or four years ago.
Wow.
I Should Have Known as another one. But really just the riffs and the music, the instrumentals. And so we were about halfway done with pre-production, and I was sitting in my bedroom with a guitar getting ready to go down to the studio, and I came up with that line that I Should Have Known, you know? And it's little things like that turn into great songs, because something like These Days or I Should Have Known or Back and Forth, you know, they become these like catchphrases that everyone can sort of relate to. And I Should Have Known is definitely one. Everyone has felt regret in their life, and it's that risk of regret that makes life worth living, you know? So I started writing this I Should Have Known idea, and I brought it into the studio, and we were working on something else that day that wasn't really working out. And I said, well, I have this other thing I just came up with. I don't know if it's any good. And I played it, and Butch and the guys said, Dave, that's really great, man. Let's do it. And we went in, and the first time we played it, everyone got goosebumps.
Wow.
The second time we played it, it sucked so bad.
We had a lot of hope for that.
So, I thought that story was going in a different direction.
No, I did too.
I was really pissed. Because it's like someone took my beautiful song and wiped their butt with it. And, you know,
want that.
So we stayed away from it for a while and then eventually did it for the record. And I had Chris Novoselic come down, the bass player of Nirvana. Mm-hmm. He came down and played on it. And it turned out great, you know.
It did turn out great. It's maybe my favorite on the record so far. But when you hear this clip we're about to play here, I Should Have Known, you're not going to believe that he sang this sitting down in a chair. It sounds like you must be jumping up and down.
I feel weird standing up and singing without a guitar in my hand. And I would feel equally weird if I was standing up singing with a guitar in my hand, but not playing the guitar.
Can you just fake it, though? You just fake it.
That would be even weirder.
All right. Okay.
All right, so check this out. A once great song that then sucked, and now I think it's come back around, and now it's pretty good. Here's new Foo Fighters again on the Kevin and Bean Show.
I Should Have Known is the name of that. Brand new Foo Fighters on the Kevin and Bean Show. Dave Grohl has been our guest and nice enough to spend some time.
I love it here.
Tuesdays in a row, man. When are you coming? You coming back next week too, Al?
I get, what do you got going on?
We don't know.
Rebecca Black?
Oh, we could only wish.
What's going on with that?
That's the duet.
Hey, I'm totally down.
Obviously, Wasting Light is the topic today. Buy it, steal it. Well, I don't care. Just get it. It's so good. But, Dave, we forgot to ask you both times you've been in so far this week. What's the plan? Another tour? What are you going to do with Foo Fighters this summer?
Well, I think we're going to do what we always do and just play a bunch of shows.
Fantastic.
Lately, we've been doing, you know, we've been doing a lot of club gigs. We did a bunch of club gigs in L.A. I guess it was in January, February.
Oh, yeah. You tweeted them, and then 2 hours later,
we toured Los Angeles.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We didn't play anywhere that held more than 500 people, I don't think. And we've been playing these three-hour-long shows. And we were just down in Australia, and we'd played for 2.5 hours. And we come back on for the encore, and I go, okay, what do you guys want to hear? And this kid in the front row says, 10 more songs! So we played until the cops stopped us. We got 9 of them.
Oh, that's good. That's close. Yeah. So I love that it's still your passion, that you still seem to enjoy it as much as you always have.
Look, dude, imagine you were a famous porn star. You really think you'd ever get sick of having sex with chicks with fake boobs?
Well, that's a good analogy.
There you go.
That's a good point.
That's exactly what it's like being in the Foo Fighters.
I'd be doing that till I was dead.
Having sex with chicks with fake boobs every night in front of 30,000 people.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dave Grohl, our guest once again on the Kevin and Bean Show. Get the Wasting Light. It's available everywhere today. Dave, thanks for your time as always, man.
See you around.
I don't want to get everybody excited or worked up here, but you know we're announcing our new breakfast next hour, the latest Kevin and Bean breakfast with Big Band Little Place. We've done it for years. We've, you know, everybody from U2 to Foo Fighters to No Doubt, I mean, you name it, we've done it. We've never done Harvey Danger. I'm just saying. Harvey Danger is still on the to-do list. We do have an announcement in an hour. Who knows? Today could be the day.
I know. And I'm going to say right now that we're not doing a breakfast with Harvey Danger.
Oh,
how dare you?
Buzzkill.
Back to you.
All right. Welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show here on a Monday. Look, I don't need you guys to make this any worse for me than it is.
No, but that's what we do.
Right. But I, look, I'm going to...
Take situations.
That's what you do, Bean. Yeah.
We take situations and we make them worse, and you are the king of that world.
Yes.
How dare you? This is me, Bean, speaking, and you probably have missed this if you haven't paid very close attention, but I've had an expanding and soon-to-be-exploding belly button for the past few years, and it has gotten worse, and it has gotten bad, and now it's getting to the point where it's purple and throbbing. You know all about that, Lisa.
Oh. Sometimes that's a good thing.
We put a photo up of my exploding belly button, which, by the way, I think I saw at the Troub once. It's up as the picture of the day on KevinandBean.com from this past Friday. So it's gotten to the point now. It's like the worst thing you've ever seen, isn't it, Alex?
Dave had it up on the computer as he was posting it, and I thought he had pulled up some like illegal sex site in the office. I was like, oh, what is that?
Yeah, don't look at it.
It's not good.
No, it's terrible. But it's gotten to the point now. It's herniated. I actually have a hernia on my belly button, and I need to have surgery on it. And they cut into your belly button, and then I guess they put some sort of a little screen in it to block a hole, I guess.
Sweet.
So I'm terrified of the surgery. Terrified.
Why?
Well, first of all, I haven't had surgery since I was about 9. Right. Okay. So it's a very foreign thing to me. And my life was changed irrevocably a few years ago. It's like the people, remember the first time you saw that ABC News special where they showed you all the stuff that's on the blankets and the pillows at the hotel rooms when they went in there with the black light? And you could never enjoy a hotel room the rest of your life because you know that it's just nothing but
sex everywhere.
I wish I hadn't
everywhere,
seen
right.
that.
I wish I hadn't seen that. That's the special that I saw about anesthesia awareness honked me up for the rest of my life because now all I can think about are those poor people on that show who were given anesthesia. The first part work where they were completely paralyzed and couldn't talk or move. The second part where they were supposed to go under didn't work. And they felt everything that was happening in the surgery.
It happens all the time.
It doesn't happen all the time. They had a guy on that show, Kevin, you remember, who went in for open heart surgery. He was awake and could feel as they cracked his ribs apart.
Mm. Oh,
and
ouch.
Ever since I saw that show, I thought, I don't ever want to go under anesthesia again. And I know it's a relatively minor operation they're doing tomorrow, but what if that happens to me?
Well, it will.
No, it's not going to.
It's going to hurt like hell. That's what.
Alex is here to share one of her fine anecdotes with you to
Good
cheer
morning.
You up.
Yes, Bean, I'm here to cheer you up and tell
what
you
what happened.
That it happened to me.
What?
It did.
Same thing.
I woke up during anesthesia. I was in high school and I was getting all four of my wisdom teeth pulled at once. And so they said to my mom, you know, we should just knock her out. And I had never been under, so I thought, okay, you know,
Wait, I would rather
get four
under.
Dentists and they pull them all out at once? That's weird.
So I go in, I'm in the office, I get in the stupid little robe, you know, and I totally get knocked out. And then at some point, I had this feeling like I was waking up from a nap, and then I had this shooting pain in my mouth, and I was like, ugh! And I woke up, and I remember seeing like a fuzzy outline of a nurse, and then the dentist, and then someone patting my shoulder and saying, it's okay.
That wasn't your shoulder.
It's okay. And then they must have just turned up, you know, cranked the dial to 11, and then I just passed back out.
Oh, no.
But you still remember it.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. Now, you said something, excuse me, Kevin, I'm sorry, but just the final PS on this. You said something in your email yesterday, Alex, about it had something to do with your hair color. What was that about?
Yes, apparently blondes and redheads need more anesthesia. So let your doctor know if you're natural or not.
Yeah. That sounds crazy.
We are pussies. You got to knock us out. We're not pussies.
You're the opposite of it. Yeah. You have to give more anesthesia. I've never heard that.
Well, that's why you woke up, Kevin.
That's weird. I woke up twice, by the way.
You woke up too?
In the same surgery?
No. No, one surgery the whole time I was awake. And yelling.
But what were they doing to you?
It was a procedure on my back, and they were putting needles in.
Wait, were you supposed to be out?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But you were yelling the kind where they could hear you, not the kind where you were paralyzed and you couldn't move
that
and couldn't talk, right?
That particular time, I was yelling, yeah.
Okay, all right. Thank God. Thank God they could hear you and not just keep working
Didn't
on you without knowing.
Didn't change
anything.
Oh, really?
No.
Is that clubbing you over the head?
You know what's weird about the anesthesia, especially the propofol, the Michael Jackson drug, is that some of them have these memory erasers, which is really weird, because I had a test done on me one time, and they said, if it hurts, that means it's bad. And so I woke up from the procedure, and I said, hey, this is great, because, you know, it didn't hurt. And they were like, oh, no, you were screaming like crazy. And I said, why do I not remember that? And they said, it has that property in it that will help you forget.
Oh, dear God.
But that doesn't always work, Bean.
Dude, that's Inception talk right there. That's
Inception.
Crazy.
It's like Men in Black.
It does.
It's done.
Well, listen, I'm not excited about this surgery, and I know that there are so many things that can go wrong. And the guys thought it would be fun for me to hear your tales of surgery woes. So if you've had experiences where, I don't know, Lisa, you were saying earlier where they cut off the wrong body part or whatever. You went in for one surgery. You came out with something else. Anesthesia nightmares are my absolute biggest fear, though.
Maybe in life.
But I'm saying we got room for all.
I know. But if that's your biggest fear, let's stick to anesthesia.
How dare you?
I mean, I think that's probably how we can help you best. So we'll take your calls, 1-800-520-1067, and we'll talk.
I'm not looking forward to these calls.
Come on now. We're trying to prop you up, man.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to be sick. Those of you just joining us here on the Kevin and Bean Show, it's me, Bean, having surgery on my herniated belly button tomorrow. And I'm worried about all the things that can go wrong because I hear horror stories from the operating table all the time, especially those involving anesthesia, people who wake up before the surgery is done or feel it when they're not supposed to. And that's what I'm afraid of most. Let's talk to Tony on line one. And we're taking your calls here at 1-800-520-1067. Your surgery disasters. Tony, thank you so much for holding on, dude. What happened to you?
Good morning, Kevin Bean.
Hi.
Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning, Tony.
I had eye surgery. I had a work injury. And I was on the surgery on the operating table. And I started to come to. And I told the doctor was doing the surgery, I can feel it. And he tried to act like I was dreaming or something. He told me, oh, no, you don't. And then he whispered something. I could hear him whispering something to another doctor there because I started to pull all the stuff off me because I was in it. I could feel it.
Oh, God.
Part of it.
Man.
I had a work injury, so they were inside my eye doing the procedure. And it was one of the worst pains I've ever felt when I woke up. So I started to drag everything off of me.
Did they knock you back out?
Yeah, they knocked me back out so bad that when I woke up, I was nauseated for hours.
Sweet.
Hours and hours.
Oh, that's good.
By the way, I didn't see, thank you for the call, Tony. I didn't see the Final Destination 5, but in the trailer, they show a girl laying down on a table and they've got the bracket around her head to stop it from moving and her eyeballs are, you know, wide open and they're bringing a needle down and stuff. And I'm thinking, this is exactly the kind of thing Tony's talking about. I mean, it's like a horror movie if something like that happened to you, and then you wake up while they're doing the procedure.
Yeah, it's 100% of the time, too, Bean.
Oh, come on!
It is. It's 100%. That's science.
Let's try Gene. Gene is on line two here on the Kevin DeBeach Show. Hi, Gene. Welcome to the show, man. What's going on?
Hi. Good morning. What do you call it? My situation was I had an endoscopy where they stuck it up your rear end.
Sweet.
Oh, man.
Again, it's a camera, right, or whatever?
Yeah, it was a camera, and then I woke up, and I could feel it in my stomach, and I was, like, squirming. I don't know if I screamed or whatever, and then I remember looking at the video of it. So while I was awake, I could see my internals on the screen.
Oh, dude.
That seems bad.
Were you able to, you know, kind of get them to up the anesthesia a little bit for you?
Yeah, they did that, but then I woke up again when they re-entered the endoscopy, or whatever they call it, when it goes down your throat.
Mm. You butt they made for that!
That's true.
That is true.
Wow, you woke up twice, Bean. Think of that.
Oh, good come call. On. Gene, thank you for the call. I hate that so much. All right, let's talk to Brett real quick. He's on line six. We've been talking about the anesthesia and how that can go wrong. There's a lot of other things that can go wrong with you getting surgery, right, Brett?
Yeah.
This seems like it happened more a long time ago, but how long ago was this surgery?
About 6 years ago.
6 years, okay.
Not that long ago.
All right, what happened?
And what were you in for?
I went in for a scheduled knee surgery.
Okay.
And the guy in the bed next to me was there to get his appendix taken out.
Uh-oh.
And somehow our charts got switched. And the nurse came in and asked me if I was ready to go, and I had already had a Valium, so I said, yep. And I woke up a couple hours later and with a shooting pain across my stomach and lifted the gown up, and I had received they had taken my appendix out, so I had to stay in the hospital.
Sweet.
And go back in and have my knee opened up.
Sweet.
Oh,
but the guy next to you still had his,
still had his appendix,
but he had a rebuilt knee.
did they do him also? You don't know, right? That's
no.
Unbelievable. I mean, look, I only know about, thank you very much for the call, though. I only know what I see on TV mostly. But don't they literally write on your body now
yes.
what body part is supposed to be operated on because of the guys who have gone in and get the wrong leg taken off or whatever?
I don't know.
That's amazing. A lot of ways this can go wrong tomorrow.
Yeah, and also when you wake up from anesthesia, at least for me, I just feel so nauseated.
Yeah, that's one of the side effects.
Awful.
That's when it goes well.
Yeah.
Let's take one more, Bean, because we do have Ryan who had the surgery that you're having, or at least.
Yeah. Hi. Good morning, Kevin and Bean. Hey, Lisa.
Pretty close.
Hi.
Hi. I had a hernia on my stomach. And mm-hmm. so they went in to do surgery on that, and halfway through the surgery, the doctor cut off the anesthesia to wake me up and then forced me to cough while he had his hands inside my stomach. And was
what? So this was on purpose he brought you back. Oh,
yes, he brought me back.
Yeah. I don't want to go to your doctor.
And then he made you part of a human centipede?
That's how these stories always end.
Bean's going to be part of a human centipede.
Oh, no.
Whoa!
Oh, no.
Ask to be the front, Bean.
I will.
Ralph was doing the Showbiz Beat a few days ago and was telling us about Austin Powers and how they are considering another one.
A fourth, yeah.
A fourth Austin Powers movie. So we had producer Alex try and line him up, and we have Austin Powers on the phone right now, so we can ask him a few questions.
Excellent.
Hey there.
Hello, how are you? Good. Yeah, baby, yeah.
Austin, you sound like you maybe you've lost a step in the many years between the movies.
Yeah, that was the setup, baby, that you could say I was old.
Hey, you're old. That's what I was saying. You've lost a step. That was my point.
Yeah, good.
See, here's the problem with
I make you horny, baby.
Here's the problem with the Austin Powers movies is that that's all going to start again if you do this. If you make this movie, everybody is going to be doing an impression of you, and no one can do it well.
Oh, behave.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't even do it well anymore.
Now, do you already have a script? Do you have a cast in place?
We have another mission we're going on.
Another mission, okay.
We're going to go back in time.
Okay.
To a time before I wore adult diapers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, baby.
I'm not sure the adult diapers is the sexy thing you're looking for there.
Do I make you horny?
Nope, not a bit. Well, let me ask Lisa. Lisa,
I just went in my diapers.
Oh, that's not what you want.
Definitely not making me horny.
That's pressure.
Yeah. Now, do you still are you still going to be battling Dr. Evil?
Yeah, baby. Okay. Dr. Evil, he's really a drag, baby.
Right.
And I'll make you horny.
Yeah, you already
still
said
no.
that.
Oh, behave.
Right.
Is Dr. Evil now?
Dr. Evil is...
Hello?
Hi, Dr. Evil.
This is Dr. Evil, people.
Wow. He's back, but you sound old as well.
I am 1,000,000 years old. I am not young.
You're not.
What I'm saying.
Now, but you've already been contacted as well, and you are in for another Austin Powers movie.
Of course I'll take on Austin Powers again.
All right. I just didn't know if you felt...
That's the evil thing to do.
Right. That's right. Of course.
Along with eating dairy for me.
Right. Sure.
Because that really binds me.
Now, but...
And give me a freaking break here, people.
Now, Fat Bastard, is he still going to be in it, or...?
Of course my evil henchman, Fat Bastard, will also be in the film.
Okay.
He's right here, by...
Any chance he's there?
Oh, Fat. Fat.
You call him Fat.
These people, will you?
Just Fat.
What do you want?
Well, we're just calling...
Get off my telephone!
We're just calling to ask about a new Austin Powers movie that has been rumored.
Oh, yeah, we're going to be doing that. It's going to be fabulous.
So you're in it as well.
Because we all need a paycheck.
Ah.
We're all desperately broke.
Right.
There's no food in my belly.
Right. So another movie would help with that, with
I'm
food.
I'm not even Fat Bastard
what?
Anymore.
What? What are you?
I'm Old Bastard.
Are you dirty?
I'm Old Dirty Bastard.
Okay, good. So this is definitely a go. We got a thumbs up from everybody, huh?
Everyone who can still raise their thumbs, baby.
What about Frau Frizzle? Frau Frobizzle? Whatever her name was. What was her name?
Do you mean Frau Frobizzle, baby?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, no, she's not in it.
Okay.
Ralph has one more look at the showbiz beat coming up here on the Kevin and Bean Show. First, though, Kevin, do I understand correctly that you're at some sort of a moral crossroads here?
Did Kevin do the right thing?
It's not really moral. It's just I feel weird about it, and I just like to get the feel of the room.
Okay.
If you would have done the same thing I did.
Okay. Nope.
There's your answer. What's next? Order Chinese food.
No. I would do that. Is that your question?
Nope.
Yes, I would do that. Kevin did the right thing.
Great restaurant in the area, but Chinese food tends to smell. So after we eat, I throw it out. But I throw it out in the outside trash can.
That's very considerate of you, so you don't stink up the house.
Exactly.
Right.
About 15 minutes later, I start thinking, I'm still a little hungry.
Oh, no.
I'm pretty hungry right now.
Well, Chinese food doesn't stuff you for the whole evening.
Right.
That's it's an old joke, but it's true. Yeah, you really do. You burn through it, and then you're hungry again. Sure.
Right. So then I think, I threw it out in the outside trash. And there's a lot of the trash in there. But,
yes, filthy, disgusting, rotting garbage in there.
But what if the box is still closed? So I went out and checked.
Oh, jeez.
And I dug through the trash. Now, just remember, Ralph, it sounds really great to you. You're really hungry for more.
Yeah, and knowing you, as poverty-stricken as you are, there's no other food in the entire house that you could possibly eat.
Did Kevin do the right thing?
But you're hungry for more of the Chinese food. So I dug through the outside trash. And it's
like a raccoon.
Like a hobo.
And one of the containers was still closed, and the other one was slightly ajar.
Uh-huh.
So I thought, well, I'll pick them up, and I'll take them into the light where I can see, and I'll check them for bugs.
Jesus,
or
what a procedure it is for you to have a snack.
So I opened the one.
I can't believe as lazy as you are, you went through all this work.
Because it really was
surprised
good.
You just didn't reorder Chinese food at the restaurant and get a brand new order.
You got another half hour.
Uh-huh.
It was really good.
You have to bring out the CSI team to see if there's any bugs crawling in your poo young.
But I have to ask this question, Kevin, and this is what's really puzzling to me. If there was enough in there to go back for seconds,
yes.
Why didn't you just wrap it up and put it in the refrigerator for leftovers? Why'd you throw it away? I can understand throwing the trash away from your Chinese food because there's nothing left to eat and you don't want to smell up the house. Right. But if there's enough food in there to eat, why is it not in the fridge?
In general, the second day, the Chinese food doesn't get eaten in my house. That's
really?
Why.
Okay.
So I just figured, you know,
maybe you should be sure you're through with it on the first day first before you start throwing stuff out.
And I opened up the first one, and it was fine, of course, because it was closed.
So you did your bug check. You did your bug check on your food.
The second one that was a jar, I did my bug check.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of just thumbed through it a little bit, and I looked, and I didn't see anything. I didn't see any bugs or, you know, any dirt.
Right? You didn't run it down the lab?
Didn't. I don't really have a lab.
Okay.
I put it on my plate, and I ate it.
That isn't good for you.
How long had the food been out in the outside trash?
15 or 20 minutes, maybe.
But this is the outside trash we're talking about. This isn't the waste basket in the kitchen.
Right.
But it is just his outside trash.
But it's the outside trash, Lisa. Think about what you throw out on this course of a week. And then think about what you would not want touching the food you're going to eat right then a week ago that's been rotting out there.
But it wasn't a week ago. The things you throw away.
No, but the food it's been sitting with was out there for a week or more.
Say that again.
The things that you throw away in that trash, are they bagged?
No. But they come in one of those, like, plastic-covered things, one of which was closed and one of which wasn't. And there was, I didn't see, I looked pretty closely. Yeah. I didn't see anything bad in it.
Well, with your vision, I'm sure you see all sort of microbes and diseases that it could be carrying.
Heat it back up.
Listen.
Down it
goes. Are we or are we not civilized human beings?
Did Kevin do the right thing?
No. We're not animals. We don't eat out of the garbage, okay?
But I put
Once you throw it out, it's gone. Right. So say goodbye and get yourself a sandwich. Do something else. But eat something else that's not been tainted.
But it seemed like it would be really... I needed more of what I had. Something else wouldn't have worked.
You're a child.
No, I'm just asking.
You are a child.
You wouldn't have done that.
No, I would have gotten something else to eat.
Lisa?
I have fished cake back out of the trash.
Cake!
Now, it's my trash in my house.
Oh, in the house.
But...
Shoot.
You didn't go out to the dumpster and bring the cake back?
There was stuff in there. And I have to support you.
Dang, you would have done it.
I would have done it.
Wow. In the outside trash.
Yes.
All right.
It was my outside trash, and it looked okay. But and we know 20 minutes.
Lisa's relationship with food is not, it's not
it's
all
not
could
healthy.
Be. Yeah, it really isn't all it could be.
I admit that.
I'm Bean, saying.
You're a dumpster diver.
No, I'm 100% in the garmy on this one. There's outside trash is a deal breaker. I'm sorry. That's the trash can where you put, you know, dog poop. You know, I mean, that just.
Excellent point.
There's no way it's totally different than something that's on the top of your inside trash in your kitchen.
You
absolutely not.
Drink sour milk.
You do. You
but that comes out of his fridge.
It comes out of my fridge, not out of the trash.
Disgusting.
It's sour to begin with,
but at least it's out of his fridge.
Muggs, you're
at least
got
I know where
back.
It's been.
Muggs has my.
Oh, of course he does. But Muggs eating other people's garbage cans.
He's eating. He wouldn't have even checked for bugs. He would have just started eating it in the trash.
He just would have crawled in and eaten whatever he ran across.
Right. You got my back.
All I gotta say is that's not brown. Rice.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Did you work
went to
on
him.
That?
I'm sorry we went to him.
Oh, sorry we went to him as well.
Man.
Yeah. So we got one yes and it's Lisa.
Yeah, you don't want me on your side, right?
And the other one is beer mugs. We're just going to disqualify because that was a dumb statement.
Yeah.
So no. Is
don't you own a dog? You have a dog, don't you?
Yeah.
So there's odds are there were
it's possible
doggy bags in there and not the ones you bring home from a restaurant.
Right. It's possible, but it was relatively closed.
There's no way a bug can get through that.
That's what the Center for Disease Control recommends when you're trying to keep something clean, just as long as it's relatively closed.
Did Kevin do the right thing?
So yes, is what
no!
you said.
No.